something that goes against what most people think and feel and want to do has to do with gear. I love gear as much as the next person. I love getting the new piece of equipment, that new thing that'll do the new thing that I didn't know I needed all these years. But I want to tell you something. It is not the gear, it's the ear.
Welcome to Just My Forte with Ben Everson. We're glad to have you along.
And this is going to be more along the lines of a regular podcast episode. And I realize that the other things that I've been doing and including on the podcast are more musical, you know, playing music, singing music, things like that. Right now, though, this episode is all about stuff and what it takes to get a final product. And something that's super annoying to me, I gotta say, is when people think they can't do it. Like, you've got to have a really expensive studio, you've got to have all the latest gear, all the latest gadgets, all the latest plugins, all that type of thing. And I'm telling you, you don't have to. I am Ben Everson. I'm glad you've joined me today. And if you're new to the podcast, I know that this episode will tend to bring some folks around that perhaps haven't listened before. I call it Just My Forte because, well, it's really a variety podcast. So sometimes it might have me talking about music. Sometimes it might have me talking about a theological issue, or even sometimes I touch on a political issue. But this one is a huge deal to me, and it's something that's really a passion of mine. And I have to talk about myself a little bit here. And that's not something I like to do because I don't want to bore you. But I have to tell you a little bit because without this, it's not going to make any sense. All right. So I call myself an avid home studio aficionado. Right. I have recorded in big studios. I've had a great time. I've been a session singer in Indianapolis. I've conducted sessions, recording sessions in some big studios, things like that. I've enjoyed it. But that's not my passion. But I mean, I love the big stuff, etc. But here's my deal. My deal is, as I believe, if you get a professional product, it kind of, the end justifies the means. Now you say, that's terrible theology and that's terrible philosophy. Live your life. The end justifies the means. Yeah, it's terrible to live your life in a moral sense that way. But when it comes to recording, all that's going to matter, it's like a photo. It's like my grandmother and my uncle are professional photographers. My brother, professional photographer, among other things. And you get that image, you get that photo that looks great. And who knows what you had to do in order to get that image? I mean, I know the Star Wars movies, the original Star Wars, Episode 4, I guess you'd have to call it, to get the speeders in the desert, they rubbed a little bit of Vaseline on the lens. I'm sure it wasn't directly on the lens, but, you know, on a plate in front of the lens to fuzz out the bottom of the speeder so it looked like it was hovering in the air. Right. They use a little bit of Vaseline or something like that on the lens and they got the result. Right. So now all these years later, it's a cool special effect and it was all done in camera. Right. All of us have probably seen cool ideas that people have done that have created a cinematic effect or on a photo or whatever. The same thing is true in audio. If you can get a professional sounding result, and that's a big if there, all right? That's huge, and we're going to talk about that in the back half of the episode. But if you can get a professional sounding result, it sort of doesn't matter how you got there. Now, there's some basic things that you've got to do to get there, but again, I'm saying the result trumps everything else. If you can get a good result, I mean, there you go. I grew up with cassette recorders and I grew up in the analog world. I was born in 1977, which dates me. I'm 43 right now. In another month and a half, I'm going to turn 44. I don't mind how old I am. I don't mind how young I am. I'm right in the middle. I'm grateful for how I grew up because I was born into the analog age, but I came of age during the digital revolution. So I still think in analog, and there are some advantages to that. There's some disadvantages, but in my mind, the advantages far outweigh the disadvantages. But we had to learn in the analog world, you had to find a lot of sweet spots. So with digital, you can, as long as you're recording and getting a decent signal, it can be really, really low, or it can be pretty hot, as long as you don't go over the threshold into complete. I mean, it's like a zero and one. Right. If you go over the threshold, it's not like, oh, there's a little bit of distortion there. No, if you go over the threshold in the digital world, it is nasty. Blah. It's awful. Right. So either it sounds right or it doesn't. I mean, there's no sweet spot like there used to be in analog. You wanted to get it hot enough on the tape. And then if you wanted a saturation effect, which I didn't do a lot because my style was not, you know, very aggressive at all. But, a lot of the sounds from the 70s and 80s that people liked were because they saturated the tape and pushed levels and used the compressors, and it was all analog. And so you had to have this sweet spot. Now, if you overdid it a little bit, there could be a little bit of distortion, but some people liked that. So, but that was a whole different era. Then when digital came out, you know, now everybody in digital wants to get these filters that make it sound like analog, right? So I can get, you know, I get advertisements all the time. Get this filter, get this plugin that will give it the warmth of analog. And that's kind of funny to me. I mean, I've tried them and I don't really notice a huge difference, honestly, you know, just speaking completely honestly, but I'm getting off track here a little bit. Growing up in the analog world, I learned to use my ears. And I had to copy what I heard. And so what gear did I use? Well, I started on cassette tapes and then I went to reel to reel, and that really helped. And then I was bouncing back and forth, reel to reel, back and forth. And then I got a Tascam Portastudio lent to me, and I was able to mess with that as a young person. I mean, that was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. I learned a ton. And then I would take those multi-tracks, those things that I had learned, I applied them to other gear. And then when I started moving into the computer world, I'm trying to think of when I started doing that. Let's see, it would have been mid 90s. So 97, 98, computers started being able to handle audio on the consumer level. Okay. And I started doing that. And then I was like, wow, this is amazing. I can do on a computer what took me forever to do. And if I made a mistake in the cassette or, you know, the reel to reel or whatever, it was a big deal. So then I jumped in full bore to the digital world and love it. Okay. But I learned to train my ear, and that's what I'm going to talk to you about on the other side of this break. We'll come back and we will talk about what you need to do and to solve this. So we're talking about, it's the ear, not the gear, right? It's the ear, not the gear. In fact, my wife bought me a shirt over for Christmas, and that's exactly what it says. It's got some, you know, it's kind of, it's just a black t-shirt with white printing on it, and it's kind of faded out and, you know, looks all vintage, etc. And it's pretty cool. And it's got, you know, a faded picture of mixers and things on it. And that's what the text says. It's the ear, not the gear. So how do we do that? What's the point here? Are you against gear? Of course not. You have to have gear to record. Are you against upgrading your gear? Of course not. You want to take advantage of the things that we have, but ultimately it doesn't matter if you don't know how to use it. So you have to have a destination in mind before you go on the journey if you want to sound professional. Now, my early recordings that I did leave a lot to be desired now by my standards today, but they still, people listen to them. So I've had to learn to judge myself two ways at the same time. The first way is by the ear. Well, tell you what, let's do it this way. You have to let things roll off your back a little bit, but at the same time, you have to be a perfectionist. So you have to live in both worlds at the same time. Right? Okay. And that can irritate a lot of people. How are you a perfectionist or not? Well, yes and no. If I grade myself, I do. I grade myself after every project. After every song, in my mind, I grade myself, and I can tell you right now that I can count on one hand the times I've given myself an A, 98, 99, or 100%. In fact, I'm trying to think right now if I have ever recorded something that is perfect. I don't think so. It's not jumping out to me. Come Thou Fount on Acapella Anthems is pretty close. I just did a video, shot video footage for the song How Can I Fear, which I did on a project in conjunction with Majesty Music, which I'm glad I thought of that one because, and that was close to perfect in my mind, how I wanted it. But see, this is interesting. Majesty Music, yeah, they are a lot of perfectionists all put together. They really are. They're good people. They've always been wanting to do things with the utmost excellence. And they're willing to pay the money to do that. It's expensive to make albums. And we were going to do an album together, and it was a solo album. And I would take some of their songs that they had done, and I would sing along with their orchestral tracks. And then I was going to do some of my own original stuff, particularly the acapella stuff, although I know I put a few accompanied numbers on there as well. Well, I was in Mexico at the time, and I recorded it in a little cement brick building using my laptop computer and a microphone. What microphone was on at the time? I think I had my Blue Spark that I'm actually on right now, and that's a $300 microphone. I mean, it's a great microphone. It's my favorite to record. It outperforms $1,000 microphones. Because again, it's not the gear, it's the ear, right? Well, anyway, I recorded the album, and you know, there were a few tweaks here and there, editing wise, but as far as the sound was concerned, they took it, used it, wonderful, boom, here we go. I even mastered it, and it met production level. And you know what? I just recorded it literally in Mexico in a little place, just using my laptop computer and set of headphones on my microphone. That was it. And that to me was a huge stamp of approval saying, yes, as long as it sounds professional on the end, well, then you're good to go. So I told you I would talk about this on this part of the episode, right? What you've got to know the destination. You've got to know what to listen for if you're going to create something that sounds good. So what does that mean? You've got to have a library in your mind of the sounds that you want. If you don't know what you're shooting for, well, then you're in big trouble. If it's the ear, not the gear, then you've got to have a blueprint in your mind of what it should sound like. I'm hoping that I'm able to sing for the rest of my life. I mean, I want to be 80 years old and still be able to sing decently. I won't have the, you know, I'll be 80, so I won't sound the same as I did when I was younger, but I want to be able to have my ears as long as possible too. So that even if I can't sing everything that I used to be able to sing, I can certainly make up for it with understanding what things should sound like and helping other people and recording and things like that. And I've been able to do a little bit of that. It's hard when I'm traveling, but you want to have a sound in your mind. So what does that mean? Okay. So find sounds that you want to emulate, whether that's a group, if you've got a favorite group, well then listen to their early stuff, listen to their current stuff, listen to the stuff that took them a while to get to, listen to the evolution of the sound, listen for those subtle things, and learn, you know, go on YouTube, watch YouTube videos of people who will explain to you the subtleties, right? Learn to hear compression, right? Go to YouTube and type it in. Learn to hear compression. Know what to listen for. Listen to the highs. Listen to the lows. Put on a pair of headphones. That's another thing. If you can't just ride in the car and expect to build a good library in your mind of what things should sound like. I mean, it's great for a road trip. You can have a lot of fun, but you can't hear things well in the car. I don't care how nice your sound system is. We've got a Ford Expedition right now for all the traveling we do for the ministry. We've put almost 50,000 miles on it in a year, just over a year. So it's been a little bit longer than a year, but I mean, That's a lot of miles, and it's got a great sound system in it, and you can hear a lot of things in it. In fact, I use that to proof albums. But why do I do it that way? So that it sounds good in a car. But if you're building your library, you want to hear as perfectly as possible. So do invest. Yes, do invest in gear that allows you to hear. Right? Because if you can't hear, so a good pair of headphones. Now, I've got a couple different kinds of headphones. The ones I'm wearing right now doing this podcast are semi-open ear. So semi-open. So I can hear a little bit of sound that comes from the outside. That helps me when I'm mixing. It helps my ears not get tired. But this really isn't what I listen to music on. I actually now listen to music on a set of Bose Quiet Comfort noise canceling. Is it Quiet Comfort 2, I think? And I listen to music on those, and I can listen via Bluetooth. A lot of times I actually plug it in wired, just because I'm one of those weirdos that thinks that, wired is high fidelity, you know, high fidelity, the highest fidelity, because you can't beat it because it's coming through an analog wire. Right now you can use Bluetooth and it can transmit. I don't remember what the transmit, data rate is on Bluetooth. Either way, get yourself a good pair of headphones, and I'm talking headphones. I don't trust earbuds. Now, maybe this is going old school a little bit, but I also want to protect my ears. And the closer your sound source is to your ears, the less air there is to buffer if there's there's a loud sound. Or if you like to listen to your music loud, that's fine. But I know a lot of band directors who have tinnitus, unless you're in England, tinnitus. They have tinnitus because of standing in front of a lot of bands, and that's a genuine acoustic sound. That's not artificially amplified or anything. So you got to protect your ears. So I opt for headphones whenever I can, because it's just a little bit of more protection and such. But anyway, listen, build your library. When I was growing up, I had the best pair of headphones that I could afford. They were $60, and I bought them from Radio Shack. Anyone remember Radio Shack? That's right. Back in the day. And I don't even remember exactly what they were called, but I remember how they felt on my ears. They were huge honking things. I took them to college, and everyone else has got these little headphones, you know, listen to their Walkmans and all this stuff. And I had these huge honking huge headphones. And then when I was listening to cassettes, and instead of a Walkman, I actually took, remember boom boxes and the speakers would come off? Well, I had a boom box that my grandpa Dan gave to me, and I took the speakers off, and I liked it because it had mono, it had a switch, mono, stereo, and stereo wide. Ooh, that was cool. And what it would do when I hit it to stereo wide was it would bring out voices, because I'm big into acapella, right? I mean, I listened to more than that, but at that time I was almost exclusively listening to acapella music. And I'm on the bus, you know, I'm with the Maranatha Chamber Singers, and we're driving around on tour, and someone snapped a picture of me because I look like I'm asleep. I'm really not. I'm just lost in the sonic town, where I am listening as deeply as I can to all the different parts. And I did that as a kid. I did that as a teenager. I did that in college. And then as I got married and we started traveling on the road ministering, we still listen to music, but I don't listen to music quite as often as deeply as I used to, because I already have a sound in my head. I already have a sound in my head that I'm trying to get to. And so, hey, listen, if you're 15 years old listening to this, that is prime time to build your sonic library. It's prime time. Now's the time to do it. Now, can you do it when you're 30? Yeah. If you're an adult listening to this, you can still benefit from this. It's going to take more work, though, because you already have a sonic library built of other sounds. Now, that could be, it could be car noise and people honking on the freeway or whatever. That might be your sonic library. And so that's why it's so important that we expose our young people, expose our kids to good quality music, not just good quality in the sense of theologically, but good quality as in how well it was recorded And there are even things that I listen to occasionally over the course of my life that I don't necessarily agree with the music style per se, but I've listened to them for the production value to hear, okay, I want my production value to match, kind of like they're the competition, right? I'm doing mostly conservative, relatively conservative Christian music. Now, it's hopefully not boring. I never want to be boring, but what's one of the ways I try to avoid being boring? Well, I want my production value to be as high as possible. So build that sonic library. That's what you need to do. Really work at that. And that's going to benefit you. I say this, and actually let's do one more little break and we'll be right back. How's that for an interlude? So I just have these little interludes that just help us along. Okay, so the last third here, this is more on the recording engineer side of things, all right? When people hire me to record their project, what are they hiring? Are they hiring a set of microphones? Are they hiring the equipment? Are they hiring the software? What are they doing? Well, how I think of it is in terms of food. So they're hiring a chef, right? That's what they're doing. They're hiring a set of ears. They're hiring me, and they like the product that I get. And so that's what they're after. So I remember someone hired me to come in and record their choir, and I came from out of state. So I loaded up my vehicle, got everything I needed to, I thought, and then I always try to have a backup system. Now, as I'm thinking, I haven't done that so much recently, but I used to always travel with a backup system. So I threw a mini disc recorder in, and in fact, I just got rid of it. It's just too much stuff, and I just don't use it. But mini disc, man, that was going to be the way to record. Mini disc was the thing. Anyway, so I threw mini disc in there, but I wasn't going to use it because I was going to record 8 different tracks, you know, stereo piano, and then 6 vocal tracks, at least 4 vocal tracks, and then 2 just kind of general room noise or room ambiance. Right? Is it ambience or ambiance? I think it's probably 2 different words. Anyway, I got there at 7 a.m. or whatever, and I'm setting up, and I forgot the audio interface. I mean, goodness, of all the things, I forgot that, and I remember I left it on the kitchen table. So now I'm in big trouble. So I've got to record this choir. And then I left the main thing at home. Horrible, horrible, terrible. I can't believe I did this. Well, so this is what I decided to do. I was like, okay, there's nothing I can do about this. I've got to record them. They blocked out the whole day. So I pulled out the mini disc recorder. Sorry, popping the peas here. I pulled out the mini disc recorder and I hooked everything up, and I'm like, okay, I got to treat this like a live concert. And so that's exactly what I did. I treated it like a live concert and I recorded everything. I basically had them go through each song one time. And so we'd come to a song and say, okay, let's sing through it. I would record it because I recorded every stinking thing, because who knows what pieces I would have to cut and paste later. So as they would go through it, I would scrawl down notes like, okay, they're loud here. They're soft here, and apparently someone just decided to mow their lawn outside. Sorry about that. Anyway, I'd scrawl down all these notes and everything, and then we would go and I'd have them sing it, twice. So they'd sing each song 3 times, and I didn't want to bother the person who had hired me. And I didn't tell anyone. I just kept it to myself, and you know what? The project came out fantastic. And people loved it, and they even sold out and had to buy more. Now, it was, you know, just a high school choir and such. So, you know, it wasn't like this big, huge thing. But for me, I mean, I've been hired for a decent amount of money to come and record. And so I was able to get the product because I wasn't bound to my gear, but I was like, okay, how can I still get that sound with the gear that I brought? Cause I never would have done that. That's not my goal. I recorded an orchestra, or actually I paid to have an orchestra record a piece recently, and I got all the files, and some pieces were missing and different things, and I'm skipping a lot of details, but I knew that there was a specific sound that I needed to get out of this mix, and the stuff that they sent to me, I was going to have to spend about 60 hours to get the sound out of that mix. So I just paid $150 and sent it back to them and had them mix it. How did I save my, you said, well, you spent $150. Yeah, but I saved myself probably a couple thousand dollars worth of time, because I knew that what I had been given, I would not be able to get the product that I needed. Why? Because I have a standard in my head, right? So hopefully this podcast helps you. We're not talking about a lot of specifics here, because I'm just trying to impress on you the need for your ear to be the thing that you rely on. So you've got to build that sonic library in your mind, in your memory, so that you can compare that, and so that you can say, yeah, all right, this is the sound that I need. I'm not getting it. So what's wrong? What am I not doing right? So if you haven't done that, take the time to do that. Take the time to build that sonic library, and you'll always will be grateful for it. Now, if you're younger, that's great. A person put it this way. They said, it's kind of true about a lot of things, but the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago, right? The second best time is today. So if you didn't plant that tree 20 years ago and you need to do it now, do it now. Do it now. Just start now. Things that are of high production value, listen to those, not just your favorite stuff, but stuff that's of high production value that you want to emulate. And that'll change. It'll really change how you listen to music. It'll change how you record music. Thanks for joining me today. Look forward to next time.
Thank you for joining us today. Find out more at Ben's website, www.beniverson.com. We'll see you next time.